1994. Grant Bulltail and Stuart Connor are at Connor's old office in Transwestern 2 building in Billings. And Grant is going to begin talking now. Grant, go right ahead.
Today I want to talk about outside influences that to the Crow tribe, and then they have an indirect influence on us. And as far as I know, this has always been true of the Crow tribe. They say that other people, from other tribes, used to come to the Crow tribe in the old days and marry Crow women, and then they say that influenced the Crow tribe. They would come in, and because the Crows are so friendly and gregarious that they welcome strangers, and they intermarry with Crow women, and then they have a big influence on the Crow tribe. And this has always been true. This is one reason why we have survived so long. We adapt to other people's lifestyles, and we adapt to certain things that we need to as our life changes. For instance, the Crows acquired horses from other tribes, and as far as I know, we acquired horses from the Shoshone tribe because of intermarriage. The Crows had intermarried with the Shoshone men and women, and they brought horses to the Crow tribe. So that's one of the things that happened to us because we let other people influence us. But today, I think it has an adverse effect on our lifestyle. We let other people come in, and we let them write about the Crow tribe, and they do not get all the information, and it's mostly the Crow people's fault because they fail to communicate with the strangers. I think it's they do not speak English that well. People who are writers are usually good speakers, so they come in and they speak English so perfect and so well that Crow people, like my dad, did not want to talk to him because they felt inferior, because they did not speak English that well and could not express themselves in English. So when outsiders come and then they write about the Crow tribe and they write about political figures, people who get involved in tribal council and government, and then these people think that they are the leaders of the Crow tribe, and really they do not have a big influence on our everyday lives. Like these political figures cannot speak, sing Crow, cannot sing or dance like our in our social affairs. We have tobacco ceremony, and then we had the beer dance ceremony in the old days. And today we have what everybody calls a powwow, but we call the hot dance, and we have a lot of these. And these political figures do not know how to participate. They cannot sing or dance, and they do social incorrect things. Like there is this one cousin of mine. His name is Herbert Blaine, and he was a blind man, and he could imitate all kinds of people. He could imitate the way they talk and their actions. And he used to tell jokes all the time about the political figures. Like, for instance, I remember Robert Illitill. He was always imitating him and telling about all the incorrect social things that he used to do. I remember one time during Second World War, when the Crow young men were going off to war, they used to have, all the Crow tribe would used to get together and have a feast and pray for these young men. And one time they asked Robert Illitale to pray for these men, and he was saying that may these young men may not be saved, and may we not be saved too, he said. And he said that my sister is the brother, and he said Jesus is my brother, and and everybody knows these jokes. And he used to tell stories about John Cummings also, who is a clan uncle of mine. I do not say this in a derogatory manner, but when you're a political figure, you know, you become a public property. So they were, so everybody talked about him, and they pick up on the incorrect social things that they did and used to tell stories and jokes about him. So they did not influence what we did in everyday existence. So they used to have a lot of arrow throwing in the old days, and called Crane. And then Guy Boldtail was one of the best arrow throwers. And others do not participate in what we did in everyday life. For instance, dominated singing. My dad's uncle by marriage is a man called Fights Well Known. He was known for his singing, you know, the whole tribe knew him. He knew how to sing all the different kinds of social activities. In fact, Fights Well Known is a cousin of my adopted grandfather, Kamsa Brett, and got the long dance to the Crow tribe during the First World War. When General Foch came to visit the Crow tribe, they picked Kamsa Brett and Fights Well Known to sing the long dance songs to entertain General Foch. And then also Old Coyote and Plain Feather were one of the well-known singers in the Prairie District. And, later on, there were Eddie Roundface, and Goes Ahead, and Oliver Lion Shows. And then there were always, he said there would, that we, they always had also good hot dancers. And one of them was George Scholes Little, Master Chief was one of them. And then later on, my adopted father in a tobacco society, Francis Rugg, was known nationwide as one of the best traditional dancers. So these people were not involved in politics, and nobody knows about them, you know. But the Crow tribe knew them, and they were respected and revered. And whereas political figures are not that well respected or revered in the Crow tribe. And in fact, they become comical figures. And when we talk about them, we talk about the foolish things that outsiders. Making them up to be heroes or like contrary warriors, you know, they depicted these political figures as they were not. They were comical figures. We talk about the foolish things that they did. They could not even speak Crow language correctly. They were always saying foolish things, but because they were good, they could speak English well and converse with English-speaking people, the outsiders thought that they were our leaders, but they were not. They were, and that's about the extent of it. Natural leaders would be people where in each district they used to pick a leader for social events hold social events. For instance, like when they had a Sundance, they would pick people in charge of the Sundance, and sometimes they would pick people to be in charge of the arrow throwing dance events, the things that went on, the leaders in each district. I think these were the natural leaders. It was always one of the district leaders, and also been president of the Catholic Church at Prayer District ever since he was in his teens, ever since he was a teenager. Special events, they always picked him to be the leader, and I think these were the natural leaders, but they were not involved in politics. And politics, most of the people in the Crow Tribe were not involved in politics until late 1960s. And today everybody is involved, even the teenagers are involved, and they want to know what's going on, and they try to know all about politics. And this is because it involves jobs. If you're not involved in politics and you live on a Crow reservation, you will not have a job.
Whoa.
So I think the natural heroes in the Crow Tribe were the cowboys, because they carried on the lifestyle of the old Crow warriors. They rode horses for a living, and they were always on horseback. And there is a kind of an antique figure about people on horseback. And everybody, if you ask what the young people want to do, everybody wants to be a cowboy. Because we all wear hats and boots, even though we don't ride horses anymore. Talking about the Crow Tribe, and so our heroes are the people who rode horses. And in my dad's generation, they were the ones that the last of the traditionalists. They knew about the people who went to in tribal warfare, like Paniku and Yellow Face and Yellow Brawl, and also Wet, Chief Wet and Chief Bull Snake, and Old Alligator, and Ancient. They knew these people that went that participated in tribal warfare, so they knew about this lifestyle, but they could not live it. So the next best thing for them was to lead a romantic life, was to be a cowboy. And they lived out in the open and lived with nature like the old crows did. But today it's that lifestyle has died, and because our way of life has changed. There's no longer an open range, and there are no longer big ranches, so we cannot live that lifestyle anymore, but we still want to be cowboys and ride horseback and want to be warriors. And people from what our young people aspire, what they want to be. And everybody says they want to be basketball players, but if you ask them at heart, everybody still wants to be a cowboy and ride horses. And some of the best riders, I guess brung riders, I guess people who rode untractable horses, horses that will buck with you and try to pitch and try to throw you, or bite and kick or rear back and fall on you. As far as I can recall, Plainfeather was one of the old, rode the rough string in the old days when they still had, went on cattle drives to Laramie and Kansas City and them camps when they used to have cattle drives. Father Cumsabred was also on cattle drives. And he said at one time they went to Laramie, Wyoming, I guess it was, and it was really wild. And it's with the man that was in charge, I don't know what they call him, a foreman or in charge like the Indians. For instance, he was there and Yellow Mule was there. And there were four tribal members in that cattle drive, and when they got to Laramie, Wyoming, they went to the bars, and he said it was really wild. There were people were fighting and drinking, and everybody carried pistols, and the Crow people did not carry pistols because they were not allowed to carry rifles, and this was after the war, the tribal wars. Right about that time, anyway, the Indian people were not allowed to carry guns, so when they got to Laramie, the man that was in charge gave them all pistols, and he said, if anybody looks at you like they want to kill you, he said, you shoot first and make sure they're dead when you shoot. So they went around and shooting at everybody, and pretty soon everybody was scared of the Crows, and they had all the whole bar to themselves. This lifestyle, we still look up to these people that lead this kind of a lifestyle. Everybody looks up to the Brung Riders, and I think these are our heroes instead of the political figures. We exactly looked up to, and nobody aspires to be a political figure, wants to be a cowboy. And today, I think the second best thing is everybody wants to be a basketball player. But whereas if you were a cowboy, you made a living as a cowboy. You could make a living in the old days, and even today. But the Yinkins cannot make a living being a basketball player, and that's what's wrong with trying to be a basketball player. If you're not 7 feet tall, it's useless trying the things that I wanted to talk about, because in a magazine not too long ago they said everybody wanted to be a basketball player, and that's not true. I wanted to be a basketball player when I was in the eighth grade, and after that I realized it was not realistic to pursue that goal of mine, so I quit that, and ever since I'm the cowboy, and I was fortunate to be a cowboy Rose, and we still had wagons, and there was still a lot of open road. It's not feasible to pursue that goal. And we still look up to the people that are good hot dancers like Francis Rock, and singers throw arrows, we still have arrows for, and we still look up to these people, and I think these are our heroes, and we look up to people that can sing and who outsiders do not have any information about this, and so write about these people, but they still carry on the traditions, and we still look up to them.
You mentioned that some of the political leaders were actually comical because they didn't adhere to Crow traditional ways, and you mentioned Robert Yellowtail and John Cummins. Were there others that you can think of that fall into that, where they were regarded as being somewhat comical by the regular Crows?
I think all the tribal chairmen were not Brung Riders, and they did not sing or dance, and so they did not influence the traditional people. So whenever they tried to participate in hot dances or rode horses or did something like that, it all came out the wrong way. So they're still a comical figure, except for maybe Edison Reelbert, who participated in traditional things. He was in a tobacco society, and he was always around hot dances, and did all the traditional things ever since he was a little boy. I guess I've never heard anything, any jokes being told about him. So I think he would be the only one that was a tribal chairman and was still not a comical figure. Although He is my teasing cousin, and I can see this. He drank too much. You know, when he drank, he did some just foolish things. So I think that was the only thing that we could say about him that was kind of comical about him.
Grant, you haven't identified your dad on this particular tape. Maybe you ought to do that, too.
Yeah, I wanted to say this particularly because I said, like, my dad was a natural leader. And I think this is hereditary. He's on his mother's side and on his father's side. They go back. All the famous chiefs in the old days, you could trace his lineage to all the famous chiefs. Like on his mother's side, his grandfather was Birds All Over the Ground or White Blanket, who was a pipe carrier and was called a chief, and he was the richest man on the Crow Reservation in his lifetime. And then White Blanket's father was Chief Blinky, who was the last chief of the River Crows and signed the 1868 River Crow Treaty, along with Horse Guard, Chief Horse Guard. And then Chief Blinky's uncles were the most famous chiefs in the Crow tribe, who are Double Face, Plays With It, and Wolf Nose, and Buffalo Hair on the Back, and Young Buffalo, and Young Buffalo with a Small Back. And then their father was Little Black Dog, who signed the 1825 treaty along with Long Hair. And then on his father's side his grandfather was Bobtail Bear, and his brothers were Old Alligator and Ancient Man, and then their brother-in-law was Tattooed Face, who were all pipe carriers. And then their dad was Big Sky, Chief Big Sky, who was the last chief of the River Crow Band under James Tail. And then Big Sky's father was Chief Twinetail, the last great chief of the River Crows, on his grandmother's side. Goldswell was a sister to Plenty Coo, and then their father was the Medicine Bird, but Goldswell was adopted by Chief Longhorse, and then Plenty Coo was adopted by Chief Whitehorse, who was there at the 1868 treaty and was also there at 1873. Chief Whitehorse and Chief Longhorse and Whitebird's mother was a woman called She Goes Along in a Straight Line, and her father was Chief Longhair, who signed the 1825 treaty. So these people were by hereditary, by their lineage, and leaders, people looked up to them. He was also a really great brung rider. I just, when he was a young man, until even when I, as an old man, he used to ride brungs and better than we did as young men. So with natural physical ability, I remember when I was a boy, I guess it was during Second World War, and we went to Sheridan, Wyoming. And at that time, Sheridan, Wyoming was prejudiced against Indians, and you could not go into certain stores or restaurants. They would sound loud on the door. Only one cafe that the Indians went to, and that was Tony's Cafe. And we went into Tony's Cafe, and we came out, we went with one of my mother's cousins, Dorothy Yellowmeal, and her husband, Melton Yellowmeal. And I remember we went into the restaurant, and then after the restaurant, we were all, my mother and I and Dorothy Yellowmeal were in the back of the pickup, and my dad and Milton were standing by the left side of the left side of the car, which was parked at the curb, and they were trying to decide what to do. You know, I guess they wanted to buy something and it was expensive, so they were trying to get their money together to buy whatever it was. And there was a bar next door to the cafe, and a Mexican man came out of the door, and I guess he had a fight with some Indians the night before, and he saw that my dad and Milton were Indians, and he came out of that bar, and my dad's back was to him, and Milton was facing him. And then I saw this man, he took out his pocket knife, and he took out the pocket knife, and he was going to stab my dad in the back. And I saw him in time, and I started yelling. And I said, "There's somebody trying to stab you." And as my dad turned, the man tried to stab him, and he grabbed him by the his left wrist, and he twisted it, and he twisted the arm behind his back, and he kept twisting it, and he tried to break the man's back, but the man was limber enough, so he was going around like a top, and my dad was twisting it, and he finally threw him over the pickup. And then that's when the cops came, and instead of taking this man to jail who was drunk and was trying to kill my dad, they told us to get out of town. It's the type of thing that my dad could do. He was sickly and athletic ability. He was a natural leader. Nowadays, he would have been a chief, and he would have been a lot. He knows about him, you know, but there are people like this who are natural leaders and are heroes, I think.
Thank you very much. We'll turn it off here. Just about done on this side anyway.